Oh, my golly. So many times I've told Tom this is easy. I don't know what he's scared about. But here I am before all you. I hope you'll have a few laughs. I hope to be able to share a little bit of our lives with you. So when you hear Tom also tomorrow, you'll tune in a little bit more. There might even be a few tears, but there is, quote, a happy ending. My name is Glenda Lee, and I am the wife of an alcoholic, the daughter of an alcoholic, the sister, the aunt, the niece, the granddaughter, you name it, alcoholism has been somewhere in our family lineage. Oh, thank you. Scared me half to death. I'm going to take you on a little journey, and I like the way Lois refers to her story when she talks about a garden. I'm going to get into the gardening aspects, too, how I use some of the tools of Al-Anon to reinforce my life. Growing up in an alcoholic home, I didn't know it was an alcoholic home. My dad was a hard-working construction worker. In fact, as we came down this river and saw the power plants and that, my dad was a pipe fitter, and he boomed for a living. And we traveled all over the country. And my dad was the hardest working guy, still is. The only thing that was wrong in our home was on weekends. My dad would start drinking on Friday night, and he wouldn't sober up till Monday to go to work. He was a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde drinker. And in the family structure, I was the eldest. I have a sister 4 years younger and a brother 4 years younger than that. I was a very smart child. Very early, I learned that if my mother and dad were arguing, if I got up and got in the middle of the fight, maybe I could stop it. I grew up thinking that some of this was my mother's fault, because if she'd just be quiet and she wouldn't argue back, we wouldn't have any problems. That love-hate relationship, you know, I love my daddy, but my God, look what he's doing. The fights, the arguments. The going to school on Monday mornings and not having your homework done, and some teacher saying, and what did you do with your weekend? And, of course, you didn't tell them. Maybe today young people do. Maybe there's less shame involved. But back in the 50s, when I was in school, you were very ashamed of this because there was no knowledge of the illness part of this disease. When I was very young, I remember my dad went to an AA meeting, and I believe he was a member of AA for about 18 months. And I remember a beautiful time in my life, malted milk, family drives, all the good things. I don't remember why he started drinking again, but I just realized that he just never really considered himself an alcoholic. Growing up in this atmosphere, I decided when I got a little bit older, in my teens, that nobody had a right to tell me what to do, because my home was so structured that my father certainly didn't set a good example. My mother had gone out and gotten a job to help make some extra money. And I became a juvenile delinquent, to say the least. When I was 16 years old, my mother and dad sent me to a private Catholic girls' school. And if anybody has ever been to a private Catholic girls' school, you know. I mean, you clean up your act and you toe the mark and they feed you all this fat institutional food and you get, you know, chubby and very pious. I came back home and finished up my senior year of high school in the hometown where we still live today and we raised our family. Went into nurses training. Nothing had changed in my family. My dad still drank on weekends. My mother and dad still fought and argued, but I was going to go out and make my mark in the world. Now this gets a little racy because I have one of these grandmother's books. We have six grandchildren, and the kids gave me one of these books to fill in, and it's got this lovely first page. You know, Grandma, how did you meet Grandpa? Well, Grandma was hitchhiking, and Grandpa picked her up. So see, we do make our own problems, you know. I came home that night. I was with a couple other girls. We had missed a bus, and we were on our way into Cleveland. And I came home that night, and I told my mother, I said, I have met the most wonderful guy. I'm going to marry him. And, of course, my mother said, oh, My God, you're crazy. Well, Tom and I spent every moment of the next 3.5 weeks together. He, in that ensuing time, met my father. My dad had come home from a job on the river. My dad did not like him, to say the least, and protested greatly, like most dads do. I believe that he saw some of the traits in Tom that he himself had. And 4 weeks after I met Tom, I married him. That marriage has lasted through thick and thin for 34 years. Come December, but I still take that a day at a time, too. I'm not making any promises. I was 18 years old, had just turned 18, and Tom was 22. We didn't have a home. He had a job at that time, so we took my dad's two-car garage and converted it into a little cottage. And we both worked very hard. We sawed wood, and we put up partitions, we laid floors, and we had this lovely little cottage to move into. And I lived in a fantasy world, to say the least. I was always a dreamer, and I always saw things the way I wanted them to be. I wasn't too much of a realist. Very shortly after we were married, Tom lost his job, and my dad came to the conclusion that I had to be supported in the style I was used to being supported, as a pipe fitter's daughter, and Tom started in the apprenticeship as a pipe fitter. We had one baby. Our first son was born, and then we had another baby. Our second son was born. In between the birth of these two children, Tom and I separated. See, the children coming and the commitment, he wasn't the least bit interested in cutting grass, decorating a house. He wanted to party. And with the children being that young and that close, I couldn't party. I couldn't get out. I'd love to have a drink. I'd love to dance. But if we went anywhere, if I got a babysitter or had my mother watch the kids, we would be out, things would be beautiful, and then before the night was over, there'd be an argument. I'd get dumped. He'd leave, and I wouldn't see him for days on end. I tried so hard to be the good wife, the perfect mother. Tom and I separated. That was our first separation. We got back together very shortly, and Craig was born. We separated again. There were friends bringing him home at all hours in the morning. I'd be standing out in the yard in my nightgown, screaming and yelling at people. And, you know, I blamed his friends. If he didn't have these friends, by the way, he also had a friend who was an electrician who he introduced to my sister, and my sister and this guy got married. So he was with his brother-in-law a great deal of the time, so my sister and I found ourselves with our children sitting at home. And if we did get together, if we tried to plan an evening together, one time we happened to have rented a double. This was one of the times when Tom figured that my mother was our problem. I was too close to my parents, so we had to get away from Mom and Dad. And we moved into Cleveland, and my sister and her husband rented a double with us. And we sent the fellas out for chicken. This was like on a Saturday. Well, we didn't see them. We didn't see them till Wednesday, I think. And when I think of the insanity, at this time we had, our daughter had been born with 4 children, and I wasn't 22 years old yet. My sister had 3 children, and while these guys were gone, and we got this phone call, they were at some distillery someplace in Pennsylvania, we were throwing work shoes at rats in the apartment. When I think back on it now, it's like, God, I don't believe that we lived through all this. I just figured I had an incorrigible youngster, another one to raise. Between the fights, the arguments, the trying to prove that I was an immaculate homemaker. One night I was told that my husband was with another woman, and this upset me terribly. That's always a very devastating blow to your ego. And I remember the insanity of this. I had 4 children. I got a babysitter. I put on my best street-walking clothes, and I went out in a bar to pick up a man to show him that I could do this too. I have to laugh about this because the way it turned out, the man who tried to pick me up, I started to cry on his shoulder. He finally said to me, "I'm taking you home, lady, and thanks a hell of a lot for ruining my whole evening." So I lucked out on that one. See, I couldn't even do that right. At this point in my life, you know, there was nothing that I could succeed at. And I developed great health problems. Migraine headaches, took a lot of Demerol, a lot of painkillers. I think at that time myself, I was really on the wrong track. Thank God I had a doctor who finally said, "This can't go on." And I had to go through a withdrawal from Demerol. But this was all the result of the pain of living with an alcoholic. But I didn't know he was an alcoholic. I thought he was just crazy. I mean, there was just, you know, normal people don't act this way. They don't leave a wife and children and go from state to state and stay out drinking for days on end and not bring home paychecks. We moved to back to Avon Lake. I decided that maybe if we had a home and he had more responsibility. Well, at this time, we had no credit. See, every time Tom would go out on a binge, he'd come home and he'd make amends. And I let him. We had washing machines we couldn't afford. I had clothes we couldn't afford. We owed every credit company that would extend us credit. We owed every department store. We ended up in bankruptcy. It was the only way out. We were just so badly in debt. When you go through bankruptcy, you don't have credit. We ended up buying a house on land contract, and we begged, borrowed, and stole the down payment from my parents, from friends. And this was going to be the answer. Now we're going to, this this is the thinking. This man couldn't maintain a home and a family, and I'm going to lock him into remodeling a house. Needless to say, things went from bad to worse. And my sister and I sat down and we decided that we both had such lousy marriages that we were going to file for divorce. And we went to see a friend who was a lawyer, and he said, "Look, girls, I know you don't have any money. I'm going to give you two divorces. We're going to clear this whole slate. You girls are young. You can start all over again. Both these guys are losers anyhow, and everybody knows it. Because in a small town, everybody does know it. You can make excuses. We no longer saw friends. We didn't see family because at any gathering, Tom always managed to make an ass out of himself. And then I would finish the job by also contributing to the hysteria. And we'd have these knockdown, drag-out battles in front of people. Well, people didn't want us around anymore. He had an excuse. I didn't. I was totally out of control without the use of alcohol. I decided to file for divorce. With this, my sister's husband came up to the house. He and I had always gotten along very well. And he said to me, he says, "I don't want a divorce." He said, "Do you think if I go to AA, she'll hold off on this?" And I figured, yeah, they had a pretty normal, sane relationship, except when he drank. Tom and I didn't even have that, drunk or sober. There was no sanity in our relationship at all. The guys got together and they decided to go to an AA meeting. Well, when they went to their first AA meeting, I was contacted by a woman to go to my first Al-Anon meeting. And I will make no bones about this. At this time in our lives, with four children, the debt, the mental, the physical abuse, I had no love for Tom. I was stuck in a relationship that I had no way of getting out of. We could not financially afford to divorce. And I knew I wouldn't get any support for the children if we did. So I was making the best of what I considered a hopeless situation. When I went to my Al-Anon meeting, and I met my sponsor, who I ended up calling Bubbles, because she had her act together totally. No problems, wonderful husband, fantastically decorated home. Everything was right in their lives. I never gave her a chance to be human. I realized that I saw what I wanted to see. I had enough problems of my own, and I didn't, when she told me that she too had been where I was, I just thought, yeah, tell me more. No way. Nobody can feel like I feel. Nobody can hate. Nobody can have the hopelessness, the no way out situation. Tom went to his AA meetings, and I went to the Al-Anon meetings. I probably saw less of him in the first 3 months of his sobriety than I did when he was drinking, because at least when he was drinking, he'd come home and he'd make some effort to spend time with me. He'd bring me these gifts, which I'd gladly accept. I found myself becoming very jealous of AA. Drunk or sober, he wasn't going to please me. And, of course, I was only going to Al-Anon for him. I certainly wasn't going for myself, because our problems were strictly his drinking. If he would stop drinking and clean up his act, we wouldn't have any more problems. After about 3 months, he said that he felt that we needed money, that maybe drinking wasn't the problem, that he was sober now and he wanted to do more for the family. And I thought this was a pretty good idea. I mean, I'd gone without for a long, long time. So, Tom left for South Dakota, which was a good long ways away from Ohio. And he went to work on the missile sites. And he was out there 2 weeks, and he called me, and he said, I'd like you to come out. I've got this terrific ranch. And I did say to him, are you drinking? And he said, no. Okay. Packed the kids up in an old station wagon, and I drove out to South Dakota. Now, Sturgis, South Dakota at this time must have been something like California when the gold rush hit. Because you talk about, it was a boom town. People were in from all over the country. There was big money being made. You worked night and day. When I got out there, I realized, I took one look at him and I knew that he had started to drink. Well, with this, I threw up my walls again. He parked me on a ranch, which was 20 miles outside of town, and I drove the children back and forth to town every day to go to school. I tried to get involved in some activities, but I took a Cub Scout troop, and I remember I decided we were going to climb a mountain, and this was after Tom had put in one hell of a weekend drinking. The bars in Deadwood loved these guys because they not only drank, they also gambled their paychecks away. And I made him hike this mountain with me. It was, and I watched him sweat and moan and groan. And I thought to him, you know, nothing like a guilt trip. These are your kids, and the least you can do is participate in their Cub Scout program. I didn't want his participation. I wanted to see him suffer. And I would have, stuck pins and needles into him at this time. He called me in the middle of the winter, and I left my four children alone in a farmhouse. And I started to drive into Sturgis. Now, I wasn't aware of western storms. They come out of the mountains, and they come down so quickly. I lost control of my car, and I went off the road. And I thought I remembered a farmhouse. So I decided I'd get out and try to walk to this farmhouse. Well, the minute I lost contact with the front fender of that car, I was lost. I rolled down a gully. My eyes froze shut. I could still hear my car running, but I couldn't see it. I was crawling on the highway when a fuel truck found me. And I remember thinking, my God, I'm going to die and my children are going to die because they're alone. What have I done? What have I done? Fuel truck pulled me in, fellas scraped the snow off of me, got my eyes opened again, and told me they couldn't turn around. There was no way to turn around and take me back to this ranch. Said they'd take me in as far as Sturgis if I could find somebody to get me out. So I was gone from my children for probably close to 3 hours. When I got into town, I then realized that I wish Tom Burns were dead. I was blaming all my problems on him. Wasn't I doing everything to control the marriage, to control the relationship? I came back out to the ranch, and I packed the children up, and we left that week to come back to Ohio. I left him there in his drunken misery. And I came home a very, very bitter, disillusioned woman. I was 26 years old. I filed for divorce. I went to work. And lo and behold, one day at the back door is a knock, and there stands my Prince Charming saying, "I'm home." I told him to keep going. I felt nothing. And I think this was worse, because I remember the love I felt, what I thought was love. I remember the hatred I felt. And when I looked at him, I felt nothing. It was, "Oh, you're here? Keep going. Who needs you?" At this time, he went to New York, and I never gave it another thought. And I got a phone call one night, and he was crying, and he needed a place to stay. I think I probably always loved Tom, but I think I just made up my mind I wasn't going to, quote, let him hurt me anymore. I didn't realize that I was probably my own worst enemy. I allowed him back in the house. I sent him money, and I told him he could come back home, and he could get a job out of the union hall. Maybe he could give us some money to take care of the family. I say this, and I don't want to hear any gasps. I think at this time in my life, I could have prostituted myself for my family. I was to the point of no esteem, no self-worth, and struggling desperately, financially and emotionally broke also. So when Tom came back home, maybe it was myself trying to save myself from something I thought I was headed for. There was just no way out. He came back home, and I don't know what ensued. I know he came in drunk, and I know he tried to kill me. I could never believe that he didn't remember what he did. I always thought you always knew what you were doing. I found out later there are things called blackouts. People don't always know what they're doing. It's a disease, but it's a self-inflicted disease. And through the AA program, you can control this disease the rest of your life. But I didn't know that then. I had Tom locked up for assault and battery, and I decided that I would press charges. I no longer was going to be made a fool. And I was going to press charges, and that was it. Which I did. I didn't drop the charges. When he was in jail, my sister and her husband had had some problems. And Bob had just gotten out of a hospitalization program. And he'd been sober for 7 days. And I guess he went to see Tom and talked to him. They went to an AA meeting. I wasn't too interested. I mean, I just figured, he's out of my life. I don't want any part of this. When I saw him making an effort, there started to be a crack in the armor that I threw up. And I decided I wanted to go to Al-Anon, and I wanted to learn more. And I wanted to save our marriage. I had made up my mind that I wouldn't allow myself to love this man. It wasn't that I didn't love him. It was just it was too painful of an experience to go through. I started to go to Al-Anon with Tom. And over the years, we've had our ups and downs. We started to work on this dream house. And every time you get busy, you get a phone call, 12-step call, or somebody call to go to a meeting. And I had a hard time handling this. I had to do some admitting. I had to admit that I was a controller. I missed going out. I missed the action and the excitement. The good times that we had, forgetting very easily that those good times didn't last. They always turned into disaster. I had my pity parties. Everything didn't roll along smoothly. We didn't get along any better. Our money problems seemed insurmountable. I was still running the house because I had run the house. My God, I'd been in charge of everything for so long. Money-wise, decisions for the children. I had a hard time letting him back in, letting him be a man, letting him be a dad again. This period of our life was a period of growth for the both of us. We were children raising children. We were immature adults raising children. Al-Anon helped me see a lot of things that I was doing wrong. When we, by the way, we got the house, we got it remodeled. Tom might tell a little story about his therapy, his sobriety. He decided to hand dig a basement. Which, you know, insanity does not stop just because you sober up. I mean, this is a guy down under a house, under an old summer cottage with a flashlight strapped on his head, taking dirt out in buckets. We lived in a tar paper shack. When I think back, I can't believe it. But it, maybe it's too like our lives. We had to start from the bottom. We had to build a foundation. He told me, he says, you can't decorate a pile of junk. You have to build a foundation. And this is what we started to do, not only in our personal lives, in our material life, but we worked our way out of debt. We worked our way back into a relationship. I got very busy. I became a PTA mother, and every organization involving the children I was involved in. I'd let my Al-Anon slip because I had other more important demands. I had my family. It seemed like whenever things started to go wrong, I'd end up back at Al-Anon because I'd need the reinforcement. When I'm saying I didn't go to meetings, I meant I wasn't like a weekly member. I'd go, and then maybe in 2 weeks you'd see me again, or maybe you'd see me at a meeting once a month. I wasn't to the point where I was working my program for me. When our families started to be raised and they were in high school, our oldest son had a few problems. I don't believe they were alcohol or drug induced, but I know they were emotional. And I fell apart again, and I went racing to Al-Anon. It was there that I kind of had to take stock that I was a very manipulative person, very demanding person. Things had to be my way. I didn't give people room to grow or be. I hadn't relinquished any of that control. Lois uses an analogy when she talks about her program in the beginnings of Al-Anon. She talks about a garden. I'm a gardener, so I very well understand that. We have an acre of land, and I garden it all. I'm an active herbalist and perennial gardener. So you put these things in, you plant the seeds, you get your plants in, but they get out of control if you don't constantly groom them. And I didn't do a constant grooming. I didn't have a program that was consistent. I figured I got my act together, everything was great, no big problems, and I'd walk away until problems surfaced again. Then I'd go back for help. I didn't realize it's an ongoing growth process. When Tommy was 18, we almost had a divorce over the raising of a child. And I'm thinking to myself, something's out of control. Something isn't right here. That's when I got back into my Al-Anon program in depth. It seemed like whenever I was in trouble, I had to go back and start from the basics. Tom and I are the parents of four children. We have three sons. The boys are now 33 and 32. We have a daughter who would have been 29 this month had she lived. What I'm getting at is, as we watch these young people grow, we had to reinforce our programs. I had to learn when mother love and smother love stopped. Two of our children realized they were alcoholic. Our daughter, when she was 23, I knew there had been liquor missing from the house. I used different liquors in cooking, and I'd buy a bottle of rum for cakes, or I'd buy wine to make jellies, and it'd be gone. And I knew Tom wasn't drinking it, and I knew I wasn't hitting it, and that's when I got back into my Al-Anon program in depth. It seemed like whenever I was in trouble, I had to go back and start from the basics. Tom and I are the parents of four children. We have three sons. The boys are now 33, 34, 33, and 32. We have a daughter who would have been 29 this month had she lived. What I'm getting at is, as we watch these young people grow, we had to reinforce our programs. I had to learn when mother love and smother love stopped. Two of our children realized they were alcoholic. Our daughter, when she was 23, I knew there had been liquor missing from the house. I used different liquors in cooking, and I'd buy a bottle of rum for cakes, or I'd buy wine to make jellies, and it'd be gone. And I knew Tom wasn't drinking it, and I knew I wasn't hitting it, and our daughter was the only one around at that time. And I knew that she was suffering from great depression, ups and downs. I suggested to her once casually, do you think you could possibly be alcoholic? She'd gone to meetings with her dad for years, but never addressed that problem for herself. And she went to a meeting one night, and she came home, and she was glowing. She said everybody thought she went to those meetings for her dad, but that night she went for herself, and she heard a woman leave. And she said she didn't identify with the woman's drinking, but she identified with her emotions. And my daughter and I sat down and we talked about our emotions. And we found that we were so very much alike. She with her alcoholic emotions out of control, and me with my manipulative emotions out of control. We developed a very nice relationship. 6 months after she came into the program, our second oldest son came to a realization for himself. Now, this was not after some family trauma. I know one night Chris was in a bar, and he was supposed to be on a job, and Tom got very upset. And I remember him saying, I'm going to go and drag that kid out of that bar. I've had enough of this crap. Well, number one, our Chris is 6'5" and goes about 240 pounds. And that could get dangerous. And number two, I said to Tom, I remember grabbing him in the living room, and I said, oh, my God, I said, you need Al-Anon. There's that difference. I didn't have any problem detaching. Well, I'm going to take that back. I had problems detaching from Tom with love, because I detached with, this is it, you know. But when you have children and they're having problems, it's very hard to know when love stops and control starts. And I remember when Chris was going to get married, I said to his wife, I think you maybe should go to some Al-Anon meetings, because I believe Chris is alcoholic. And I think you're going to have to know about alcoholism. And she told me how she resented that. She said, how dare I say that about her husband? We laugh about that. I said, yes, but I said that about my son, too. And it was harder. It's a much harder admission to make about your sons or your daughters than it is, I think, about your spouse. Because you have that tie that binds. I'm happy to say that Chris has 5 years in AA. And we have a very nice relationship with him. I have my youngest son, most normal social drinker, doesn't change an iota, has a beer or two, and that's it. No big problem. My oldest son just doesn't want to fool with it. He said he's kind of afraid of it, and he never wants to get involved. Our daughter was 26 years old when she was murdered in Florida. Tom and I have had 2.5 years of trying to rebuild our lives. Ironically, it's exactly 2 years and 6 months today. It was back to basics. It was learning how to deal with hurt and anger. This program is just for today, I will. If anybody has this card, took me back. Took me back to the years of just for today, I will get out of bed, put my feet on the floor, make myself attractive, do 3 things I don't want to do. I'll work my program to the best of my ability. I know we both went on sheer instinct, and that's when I realized how much this program has meant, because what I thought was something that was maybe outside of us. I'm not speaking for my husband. I realized that my Al-Anon program is my breath and my life and my being. It's my relationship with what I choose to call a power greater than myself. that has given me the strength to keep going. It's put me in a position. I was telling somebody the other day who was complaining about a husband who wasn't doing anything around the house, even though he was sober. And I was kidding her, and I said, gee, I said, I learned how to wallpaper, paint, refinish furniture, and I'm my own landscape architect. I learned how to do that through the program. Instead of sitting and feeling sorry and blaming because things weren't being done, I had to take responsibility for my own life and do them for myself. I learned a lot. What started out as resentments turned out to be learning experiences. And got a pretty good name as a decorator and a gardener, and people stop in to talk to me about these things. And I think, yeah, and I thought those were trials and tribulations. Al-Anon gave me the courage to extend myself, to reach out, to become the best person I could be. I've tried to pull some pluses from our daughter's death. I work as a victim's advocate. I use my program on a daily basis with other people whose lives have been shattered beyond repair. I feel very fortunate that I've had Al-Anon in my corner. One of the women I've come across, her husband is an active alcoholic, and she is in Al-Anon. And we shared our program as well as our loss. I try to bring this into every facet of my life. It's sunk in through osmosis. It's sunk in through repetition. It's sunk in through realizing that I had my own garden to weed. And I'll tell you a cute story about weeding gardens, just to show what can happen. I'm an avid gardener, and I met a man, and I still trust people, by the way, because I made up my mind that I would not let what's happened to our family destroy my faith and trust in other human beings. And I met a man, he gave me a plant. He said, I'd like you to take this and put it in your garden. He says, you get everything to grow so well. He says, I'd like to see what you're going to do with it. Well, I want to tell you, I grew the biggest, most gigantic crop of marijuana you've ever seen. And I didn't even realize it, which was so funny, because people come from all over to see my garden, and here I am. Well, needless to say, the local police had a good time with this one, because I did turn it in. One of my sons was kidding me. He says, my God, Mom, he says, you finally grow a cash crop, and what do? He says, you give up. But the just for today, to tell you that I am so grateful to be a member of Al-Anon. I am grateful for everything this program has given us and our family and our grandchildren. I have 3 grandchildren that are benefiting from this because their daddy's in AA. And I'll tell you another thing. We did a publicity on an organization called Parents of Murdered Children. And the young girl that came out, the young reporter, came out to the home, and she interviewed Tom and I, and we talked about our daughter. And Tom went to a meeting maybe 6 or 8 months later, and a young woman come up to him, and she said, Mr. Burns, do you remember me? And of course, Tom really doesn't remember people very well. It's like, oh yeah, you'll have to jar his memory. And she said, I'm the reporter who did the story on your daughter. And she won a national award with that story. But more important, she said that she had gone to AA because of our daughter and because of Tom and I. And she realized that she didn't have to waste any more years of her life. And these are the flowers in the garden. These are all the beautiful people that we have met, and all the good and the positive. I don't waste my time on yesterday. I'm as happy as I choose to be today. And I try to lift this program one day at a time. And sometimes it's only a couple minutes at a time. But it's seen us through, and I hope to keep growing. and to keep knowing and to keep being unable to share and be given something, because I never come here that I don't leave with more than I bring, believe me. This has helped me more than it's helped you. It's reaffirmed the principles I choose to live by. Thank you.